Hi there, guys. This is Andy from Retro Asylum. Now, this is a pre-announcement to the main podcast. I'm not actually on this main podcast. Today's episode was actually recorded by Foggy and Simon LCFC, who's one of our community members, and they've done a fantastic episode on the ZX Spectrum. So yeah, time to move on to the announcements. The first announcement is I've lost my voice, which is probably why I sound the way I sound. The second announcement is today is Friday, which means that the C64 Elite Collection is now out on the iPhone and iPad. So why not purchase that? Or you could sort of like listen to the whole show and listen to right at the end to find out how you can win yourself some codes for the C64 Elite Collection. I want to give a big special thanks to Steve Wilcox for actually donating those, by the way. So anyway, the next part of the announcement is Revival. We've got a set of tickets to give away, and I'll announce a new competition at the end of the show as well. But hey, why don't I tell you who won the last set of tickets, and that's for the 18th of May for Revival. And the way the winner won this was basically they had to get the highest score on California Games on the Sega Master System. Now, it was very competitive between Poral and TMC. Now, TMC did get the highest score, but because he had won a set of tickets already for the 18th of May for Revival, this sort of set of tickets goes to Poral. So congratulations, Poral. And you win a set of tickets for Revival. Big special thanks goes to Chris Wilkins for donating those tickets. Now, the next competition will be announced towards the end of the show, so keep on listening, guys, and you'll find out how you can win.
Hello, Commander. Computer reporting.
Crown Corp, DHS, Global Terror, drones, fast food, vaccines. It's 1984. It's 1984. It's 1984.
Hello, and welcome to Retro Asylum. I'm Foggy, and today, me and a guest, that guest being Simon LCFC in the forums, we're going to discuss our own personal favourite top 10 games for the Spectrum from the year 1984. Now, I don't know what he's picked, and he doesn't know what I've picked, so it should be interesting to find out if we've picked the same games or completely different games. We have discussed avoiding the usual big sellers or games that everyone would consider the best for that year, e.g. Ultimate Games, particularly Nightlaw, which everyone seems to have as their number one. As like I said, this is our own personal top 10 each, not necessarily the games that sold the most that year. Right, Simon.
Yes.
Hello.
Right. Hello.
Just quickly, before we start, can you go through your sort of gaming history? And, you know, what you, I know you're a Spectrum bloke, so obviously the Spectrum's going to be there. But have you got all sort? Did you have all the Spectrums all the way through?
The only one that I didn't have, well, the only two that I didn't have, were the Plus 3 and the 128K, the heatsink that came out briefly before they did the Plus 2s.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I had pretty much every Spectrum that that was released.
From when? When did you get your first one?
Christmas in 1983.
So quite an early start then. So
pretty much, yeah.
Do you remember what the first game or couple of games or compilation tape you had was or anything like that?
My memory's a bit fuzzy about the exact games that I had, because I know when I had my Spectrum given to me for Christmas, it was actually given to me and my brother, but he had shown no interest in it whatsoever.
Right.
So, which was a bonus.
Yeah.
But I remember all sorts of games. I mean, I was playing stuff like Cosmic Kanga and obviously Manic Miner are the first two that spring to mind.
Yeah, well, I think everyone had them, didn't they? Well, not so much Cosmic Kanga, but I certainly did. But, okay, so we're going to do each of our own individual top 10s for 1984, which obviously you fall into that demographic because you had one then and I had one then.
Yep.
Although 1984 was one of them years when my head was starting to be turned by the Commodore 64. So some of the most obvious ones, like maybe Nightlaw, I'll say this now off the bat, I didn't put in there because although technically it is probably one of the best ever games for the Spectrum, it's... because I didn't play it as much as other people at the time, like I say, because I was looking at other stuff.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know my Spectrum history, and Nightlaw isn't on my list either. I think it's one of these games that people tend to remember fondly, and it supposedly kickstarted the isometric style of gaming for the Spectrum. But it was boring. I think a lot of people were just sort of worried about saying this because it's sort of viewed with such passion. But it's such a boring game.
I was going to say, I didn't really play it much myself. I remember being impressed by seeing it, but that was like the last knockings of me having a Spectrum, so I wasn't really that fussed about it, to be honest.
You didn't really miss a great deal. I mean, you can't deny it looked absolutely fantastic. It really was a great game, but there just wasn't a lot to do in it, and there was a lot of slowdown in some of the rooms.
Yeah.
An Ultimate Gamer has made my list. I was really trying to avoid putting one in there, but there is an Ultimate Game in there, but I'm not going to tell you where it is or what it is.
Yeah, look, I avoided Ultimate Games on purpose tonight. Just because they're in everybody else's top 10 from 1984 for Spectrum, and although some of the most obvious ones are in there still. So, but anyway, all right, so yeah. let's make a start then. What did you get as your number 10?
My number 10? Number 10, I've put Jet Set Willy by Software Projects.
Right, and why is it so low down on the... Because for a lot of people, that would come quite near the top, wouldn't it?
This is what I was thinking, but it's... There's a few reasons. I mean, you can't deny that it's a brilliant game. The imagination that's displayed in the game is would probably put it towards the top of the list, but it was so buggy.
Well, yeah, that's why it is in the top 10, but it's come quite low down as well. And it was because that attic bug and Software Projects lying and saying, oh, it was poison gas in some of the rooms when you trigger something. I mean,
That's it.
It's all rubbish. I mean,
and you had to poke. You had to put a poke in.
Yeah.
Merge the loader, put a poke in. Just to collect one of the items off of the top landing, I think it was.
Yeah, it was impossible to get, wasn't it? Yeah. So, yeah, it's a shame because the cover was brilliant and it was eagerly sort of anticipated because of Manic Miner. Yeah. And there's no question in the ambition of it. And if it was released without any bugs at the time, I don't think anyone would argue with it being high up. But you're right, it was riddled with bugs and stuff.
Yeah. It's in the top 10 because the bugs didn't make it unplayable. I mean, they actually lent it a little bit of charm, I suppose. But it's buggy, and it's 10, and it's not going to go any higher.
Well, no, that's fair enough. I found it too difficult back then, and I certainly did now. I mean, I don't know anyone completed, even without the bugs, obviously. I don't know anyone ever come near to completing that. Because, you know, you couldn't save where you was at any point. There was no sort of save points or anything like that. And you just, how many lives do you have? 8 lives or something? I can't remember.
It's something like that. I think it was 8 or 9 lives, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Which, yeah, it's a great shame. It's a brilliant game, but just flawed. So, I sort of agree with that being at number 10, to be honest. Okay. Well, my number 10, I don't know if you've played it, is a game called The Biz, released by Virgin Games, which is basically a Rock Band manager. Have you ever heard of this song?
I have heard of it. I don't think it's one I've ever played, though.
Well, like I say, it's a Rock Band manager. It was written by Chris Seavey, who was also known as Frank Sidebottom later on in life.
Ah.
And he was quite involved with the Spectrum, well, Sinclair Computing in them days anyway, because he was in a band called The Freshies at the time,
right,
in the very early 80s, and he released a record called Camouflage, which on the B-side was a ZX81 game, which, well, it wasn't a game, it was the video for the song. So the idea is you record it, put it in your ZX81, play your record, and you'd have a video synced up. So it was one of the first people to sort of do that, and it really, like, innovative, you know what I mean, just to do that sort of thing. So he wrote a game called The Beers, and basically you've got to get your band together, call your band a name, obviously, which everyone who's got any interest in music would want to do. You know, you've always got good band names and bad band names.
Yeah.
Style of music, you know, punk, rock, whatever it was. You type in the name of some of your friends' names as bandmates, the name of a couple of your enemies, because later on in the game that becomes apparent, you know, name of your wife or girlfriend, because that gets used in the game as well. And you basically start off with no, like, talent or money. And what you've got to do is, obviously, practice and get small gigs in, like, a scout hut to start off with, and then maybe a school dance or something. And then maybe you can support a bigger band, and then you get your chart run down, and, you know, the idea is to get a number one single. And if you did, at the time, if you got to number one, you could send off a special code that they would give you, and you could go on stage live with the Freshies as like a prize thing. But I don't know if anyone actually did it. And yeah, it was just a really early sort of management game. And I'm quite like a bit of a management game in general. But to have one about sort of the rock industry, you know, the music industry, was quite interesting for me. I think it might have stick my neck out, and I have no way of knowing this, verifying this at all. But I would guess it's where Rockstar got Ate My Hamster sort of idea from. Maybe, yeah. I don't know. There was another one on the...
Funny enough, sorry to interrupt, but that was actually what was going through my mind when you were talking about this. I was immediately thinking of Rockstar Ate My Hamster, so...
Although Rockstar Ate My Hamster all seemed much more polished and not so much of a simulation, more of a sort of game of it, but this seemed to be a bit more of a simulation, really. There was a game on the Commodore 64 called It's Only Rock and Roll, which was similar, came out at the time as well. Same thing. I enjoy playing it. I still like playing it now. It's got to go in there somewhere. I think 10's about right, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely worth a go.
I don't think there was a great deal like it out at the time anyway. I know Addictive did a lot of the old management games, but I don't think even they sort of trod into rock management territory, did they? I mean, they did Software Star and obviously the football management games, but it's...
Yeah, I mean, Software Star was pretty good as well.
It wasn't a bad game at all. And I wasn't that keen on the management games, if I'm honest, until a bit later when Colt started releasing a lot of the football titles. And D&H software and things like that.
The other thing about this, of course, on the B side, it had a few singles from the Freshies, you know, on the B side, so you could play them while you sort of,
right.
You know what I mean? Which, if I've done my editing correctly, there should be one playing in the background now. So that's what you can hear, if you can hear anything. Okay, so what did you get for your number 9? Sorry,
my number 9. Another one that's probably going to be an obvious choice, Bruce Lee by US Gold.
Alright, why is that? I mean, that's regarded as quite a good Spectrum game. Why is that, again, quite low down in the list?
The main reason it's so low down is because it's so easy. It's, honestly, if anybody had to cheat at this game, if they had to type out a massive listing to give themselves extra lives, or they got a multi-face just to cheat on this game, they've really got no business using a computer at all for anything other than word processing. It was the most ridiculously easy game I've ever played.
You see, I thought about this, but I always considered this more of a Commodore 64 game, because that was like one of the first games I got.
Well, it's one of these that I've actually played on a number of systems. I mean, they released it on the BBC, Spectrum, the Commodore 64, obviously the Amstrad. So every version, there's really not a great deal to differentiate between them. Only the visuals, it's still playable. It's an enjoyable game. It really is. It's got absolutely nothing to do with Bruce Lee at all.
No.
Which is... I can't remember any Bruce Lee movie that involved you collecting lanterns to destroy an evil wizard.
Well, no, I mean, why would you?
Yeah.
I found it better on the Commodore 64. And I know it's easy. It's perfect if you've got a little handheld emulator and you're on a half hour's journey somewhere. You can just about do it in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're right, it is fun to play still, even though you know what's coming, you know it's easy.
Well, that's it. It's ridiculously short, ridiculously easy. The graphics, I mean, on all systems, I don't think they were that brilliant. They weren't bad.
Yeah, well, they were better on us. Obviously, the Spectrum didn't have much of a colour palette to use, and the sound was limited. But then again, a lot of people said it moved a lot more smoothly on the Spectrum. So, you know, it's all horses for courses, really, I suppose.
Really, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of these games that were released on sort of multiple systems at the same time, and there really isn't a great deal isn't a great deal of difference. The Commodore, obviously, more colourful, but then you could say it was more blocky as well.
Well, yeah, it definitely was, yeah.
But I think that's an argument for another time.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Okay, so Bruce Lee is your number 9. Oh, for my number 9, I had Jet Set Willy in there for number 9, because of the reasons we spoke about.
Right.
It was buggy and too difficult for me, but I'll say hats off to the ambition of it, you know.
It was, yeah. We've probably had something about the soundtrack as well, which the fact that you could turn it off was was actually, brilliant.
And if I've done my editing correctly, it should be playing in the background now. But I'll turn it off because I know it annoys you. All right, so that moves us on to number 8. Your number 8 is?
My number 8 is Daley Thompson's Decathlon by Ocean Software.
What were the reasons that made it into your top 10?
Again, there's a few reasons for this. Primarily, really, I suppose it's because it's the first real sports game I ever played. It wasn't brilliant by any stretch. A lot of the events were very samey. I mean, if you play things like the javelin and the discus, pretty much they're exactly the same event, just with different animation. It was a good, fun little sports game. Had some nice white noise music when you started an event, and the animation was pretty spot on as well.
Is it, apart from the long jump, where he sort of lands straight on his backside?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I liked it. I have got it in my top 10, not quite yet, though. But it was... I've rated it as a game because it was the best sort of track and field style game that Spectrum had.
At that time, yeah.
Yeah, at that time. But before that, I think there was one... I was desperately looking for one. I think there was one called Olympic Special or something, and it was really pony. It looked terrible. Yeah.
I think Activision did Decathlon as well, didn't they? Activision's Decathlon.
Well, yeah.
And that wasn't great.
That was a game I more associate with the Commodore 64 again, because it was really good on there, the Activision Decathlon. But I didn't ever play it on the Spectrum. I guess you did then.
I think there was a lot of games that Activision did on the Commodore 64, and I really don't like saying this, but a lot of the early Activision games were so much better on the 64. Pitfall 2, Hero.
They
all worked brilliantly on the 64, but for some reason they never had that. I don't know, there was something a bit missing on the Spectrum version, so Decathlon's one of them.
Yeah, well, the other thing about Daley Thompson's Decathlon, did you go on and play, rate the sequels, if you like, the Daley Thompson Super Test and all this sort of thing?
Olympic Challenge I thought was awful, so I'll get that one out of the way first. It was absolutely terrible, but it must have made them a lot of money, because I think LucasAid sponsored them for that, didn't they, Ocean? yeah, I think it was they got Daley Thompson and LucasAid, so that made them a fair few quid. So I don't think at that stage they probably didn't really care what the game was like. But Super Test, the one in between, was excellent, especially the 128K version. It had some really, really nice music, a few extra events. Yeah, it's very, very good.
Right, I'll try and find some of the music for that and stick that in as well. Yeah, I did rate Daley Thompson, but like I say, it comes down a little bit lower. For my number 8, I picked Moon Alert by Ocean.
Very good game.
It was and is still a good game. It's obviously a moon buggy clone. It was written by, I think it was Ken Farmer, John Mayers, and David Fulp, according to Wikipedia. Yeah, it was just balanced right, because there were other moon buggy clones or type games on the Spectrum. They never had it right. Moon Alert just had that right sort of inertia. Do you know what I mean? It was it flowed really nicely. You had some control of your moon buggy while you was in midair as well, so you could sort of time your jumps. And I just really rated it at the time, and I remember putting some hours in at the time of this game.
It was excellent. I mean, you're right. There were a lot of moon buggy, Moon Patrol clones, because I think that was the arcade version, wasn't it? Moon Patrol, where everything was ripped from.
But
I mean, it did stand out. So, I mean, it's not in my top 10, I'd have to say. It's not one that I played a massive amount, but it is a very good game.
Well, that's the whole point of having their own top 10s, is that, like I say, it's not in your top 10, but it's been brought up as a game that someone, you know, just to talk about, because it does deserve a little nod of the head there, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so your number 7 then we're on to now.
My number 7 is Booty by Firebird.
Ah, right. Did you originally get this because it was a cheap game? It was a budget game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what everyone did.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, everybody went and bought things like Booty and sort of Finders Keepers was another one, and things like this, and they thought, it's just cheap, it's only a couple of quid, blah, blah, blah. They put it on and...
You even sounded a little bit like a pirate then. You went, arr.
Did I?
So, just to explain what Booty was about then, platform game.
It was a platform game, and basically you had to collect all the treasure from the pirate ship and not get killed.
Did you come anywhere close to achieving that goal?
Never.
No, nor did I.
Never. It's one of them games, though. I mean, it was John F. Kane, if I remember right. He'd because he had the rabbit label, didn't he?
All right. Yeah.
So after that, I don't know quite what happened with that, but I think this was his first game for Firebird, and it was absolutely brilliant. The graphics were absolutely spot on. I mean, they were very, very simple, but they were the portholes is the one thing that I remember. Because just looking at the portholes and the water swooshing about in the background. And I thought that was absolutely amazing. At the time, it just looked great. And there's it's one of those, like Manic Miner, it's only got 20 screens. I think Bruce Lee only had 20 screens at the time.
Yeah.
But this one, there was so much strategy behind it because you had to collect the keys and there were doors that would take you into different screens.
That's right,
parts of different screens. And you had to remember whereabouts, what position the pirates were going to be in, and...
Yeah, it's all coming back to me now, actually. You've reminded quite a lot about that game. Yeah, I remember it had annoying music, though, all the way through it.
I thought the music was quite good, actually. I thought it was slightly less annoying than the music for Jet Set Willy.
Yeah, but, I mean, over and over again. What was it? Was it Captain Pugwash themed, or Blue Peter, or something? I can't remember that. But it was some sort of... Sea Shanty.
Yeah, it was. I'm pretty sure it was the Blue Peter one.
Right, well...
Somebody will probably point out that I'm completely wrong there.
Well, no, again, if I'd done the editing correctly, it'd be playing in the background about now, so...
Well, it's actually one that I didn't feel the need to fire up and play. Everything on my list, I'd like to add, I have actually played and sort of fired up over the weekend and had a good crack at playing. But Booty, I didn't bother putting on, because it's one of those that I remember so well, I remember so fondly, I thought to myself... I don't need to.
You put your hours in already, so you know.
Well, that's it, yeah. So, but I mean, there were so many nice little touches. I mean, the booby trap treasure, you know, you pick one up and all of a sudden you'll hear the sort of try and get away as quickly as possible. The flying parrots, the music in the game stopping, just so that you know there's a suicidal parrot coming across the screen.
Right.
So, giving you a good chance to escape, and it's... really clever.
Do you know what, so I might fire that up again after this, because I haven't played that for years and years, because I've always sort of, I've seen it on YouTube, of course, I played it at the time, of course.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've played it since, so yeah, maybe I'll give it a go, so I reignited my interest in that one.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about, and this is...
Well, there you go. There's another thing as well about it, which I think probably a lot of people won't remember. Again, I'm probably wrong there. But if you plug in a Cura speech unit, you remember the old Cura speech unit, Spectrum, and you load Booty up, it doesn't actually load Booty. You've got a hidden game.
Really?
That comes on instead. Yeah. Very sort of, if I remember rightly, it's very much like, it's like a really, really poor version of Scuba Dive.
But still, you know, a hidden game.
Terrible.
I love things like that.
It is. I mean, it's a lovely little touch. Rubbish game.
but that's not why
we're talking about Booty, but it's just one of those sort of brilliant little touches that makes it a little bit more special.
Well, maybe someone listening knows, but yeah, I'd no idea about that.
Really?
Yeah, no, never heard of that at all. So another thing there. Great.
Before Sir Clive's creation came along, computer games were the preserve of amusement arcades. The ZX changed all that. You simply plugged the computer into the TV and played games without needing a pocket full of 10p pieces.
But it's kind of like our little punk moment for those kids growing up in the early 80s.
This was the first kind of computer where you could tell your dad that you're doing your homework when you're actually playing, I don't know, Chucky Egg.
They always had weird names, like Fat Worm Blows a Sparky was one game.
I remember having Batman on this, and it took about an hour to load it up. And then if you died, it was another hour.
But you accepted that?
Yeah, that was fine.
It was a great little machine. I loved my Spectrum.
Where are we? Number 7. My number 7 was 3D Star Strike by Real Time Software, which was the only Star Wars clone of note. You know, we are talking about Spectrum in 1984.
Yeah.
But it was pretty damn arcade perfect as much as you could get it, you know. And that's what I was looking for. I think there was another game which tried to rip off the Star Wars arcade game, and I can't think what it was now. It'll come to me later, probably. But that, you just didn't do it. I think it was by Rabbit Software, actually. Did it ring any bells?
Death Star. Rabbit did a Death Star game.
Yeah, was that it?
Well, Sinclair did... Sinclair actually did Return of the Jedi Death Star Battles. I don't know whether that was about the same time.
Yeah.
So there was another one.
This is that... Was that the Sinclair one? Was that the actual... where you go into the Death Star, into the trench?
I never ever played it. One of those that I've had at varying times.
No, because that was Star Wars. The Sinclair one was Return of the Jedi, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Oh, you had Death Star Interceptor by System 3, was it?
Death Star Interceptor. It might have been something like that. Yeah. But this, anyway, going off on a little bit of a tangent.
Yeah.
This 3D Star Trek was the best Star Wars arcade clone for the Spectrum there was. I think they did release a Star Strike 2 as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Which... Was it exactly the same game but improved, or was it a completely different game?
I think it was very similar.
Well, I seem to remember.
I've got no idea actually.
See, what I would consider a good benchmark for a Star Wars game is that when you're in that trench, and you're going up and down trying to avoid the obstacles and stuff, that your sort of head moves up and down with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember me doing that, and my mum sort of saying, "What are you doing?" Because it was like trying to sort of ride a roller coaster while I was playing this game, you know. So
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Did you ever find yourself playing any sort of driving games?
Yeah.
Do you actually, when you turn a corner, do you actually drift left with the controller?
Do you just find yourself
drifting?
Also,
then as you're braking, you pull yourself back a bit.
Super Hang On, it might have been, or Road Rash. It was a motorbike game anyway. I played it on my mate's, probably a Mega Drive or something. And I sort of caught myself sort of trying to look over the top of a hill as I'm climbing a hill, you know, just trying to peer over the top. And I've noticed my son does it now when he's playing the driving game and stuff. He tends to, you know, do that as well. I think But anyway, Star Strike, I do remember me sort of doing that. So I must have been either really into it, or it was really good, you know, quite a good sort of bit of animation, you know, it was making me sort of do that. So I did rate it, and I still do, so it probably was one of the best.
It was very highly rated at the time, if I remember. I think its sequel was as well. They both sort of come across as very, very, very good, Star Wars type games.
Yeah, complete rip-off, of course, but, you know, they were early days, you know.
Most games leading up to 1984 were rip-offs of something, to be honest.
Oh, it was like Dodge City, the early days, wasn't it? Every Spectrum game was a complete rip-off of something. So your number six is...
My number six is Ghostbusters by Activision.
Okay. Again, this is... I always attribute this to a Commodore 64 game more than a Spectrum game, but why did you rate this as a Spectrum game at the time?
Well, I mean, I've got all my little notes sitting here, and the first thing I put down is all the bad points.
Okay.
So get those out of the way first. Right, it's an awful-looking game.
Yeah.
It's awful. I just thought it looked really boring, awful, drab. It was the logo at the start, the title screen logo was lovely. That was nicely drawn. You had a nice bit of music, you had the karaoke bit as well. Obviously with the Commodore 64 version, you had the bouncing ball, which, on top of the text, do you remember
that?
The
space bar, yeah, of course.
That's
the
it,
space
yeah.
bar where it said Ghostbusters, yeah. I mean, I could sing the praise of the Commodore 64 one, but, you know, this is a Spectrum show today, so I won't go there.
I will concede that the Commodore 64 version of this game is better, slightly. The music slightly. And the presentation were a lot better than the Spectrum version. But this is the reason I'm going through the bad points, because it's a terrible-looking game, apart from the title screen. The music's excellent. The sound is not fantastic. The clicking on the text right at the beginning, where you start up your ghostbusting franchise, that constant clicking, it just made you feel like you're in a field full of crickets trying to play this game. It was terrible.
Yeah. Okay.
But the gameplay was stunning. It was so much fun.
What impressed me is that it would be so easy just to make an arcade game out of that, wouldn't it? Ghostbusters, and you just go around shooting ghosts or something.
Well, that's it, yeah.
But they did sort of factor in the film quite a lot, didn't they? And there was a sort of start, middle, and end, you know.
No, well, you're absolutely right. They did try and tie in as closely to the movie as they could, obviously within the sort of the constraints of 48K. And they did a brilliant job of
that. Yeah, they did. So, excellent.
Obviously, something had to go by the wayside, and the, you know, the visuals were, I think, rightfully put to one side while they concentrated on the game. Because, I mean, it is still quite a simple game. Just drive around, catch ghosts.
Well, the traps, you had to kick your car out at the start, didn't you?
Yeah.
Decide if you was going to have ghost bait or the vacuum cleaner where you suck up the ghosts in the road, do you remember?
Yeah, yeah.
And things like that. So, and yeah, you got a code, if you completed it, didn't you get a code where you could start again with more money?
Yeah.
Was it, wasn't it? Something like that.
There were lots of codes floating around. I remember one specifically, I've got no idea why, but I remember seeing a cheat. It was either Crash or Your Sinclair. Obviously, yeah. That's where everybody sort of got all the bits and pieces from.
Yeah.
But you had to type in Billy Tang your name at the start, and I can't remember. I can't remember what the account number was, because I think it's a series of about 12, 14 digits.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've never quite worked out what the relevance Billy Tang has to Ghostbusters. It's just I've never seen any sort of name like that tied with Activision or the game or anything, but. Yeah, that gave you absolutely tons of money if you put that code in.
So that's Ghostbusters, which I can't argue with you. It was a brilliant game, but like I say, it's just it's always has been a Commodore 64 game for me. But there you go.
And the speech as well was fantastic.
The speech, yeah, brilliant speech. Yeah. Okay, for my number six, I've picked Deus Ex Machina by Automata, Mel Croucher.
Tuesday evening, after tea and compulsory prayers, the last mouse on Earth tried to hide from mankind inside the machine. Just before it died, as the nerve gas eased its sphincter, the last ever mouse dropping caused a slight accident. You may control the progress of this accident on my behalf and with my permission, and lead it up the telepath.
And I've picked it because it just deserves a mention, strictly because it was ahead of its time. It was more of an experience than the game, you know. I wouldn't say the game was brilliant playability wise, but as a piece of art almost, it was just phenomenal. I mean, I don't suppose it's a massively. It has been done, like I say, with Chris Seavey having a record that you can sync up with the gameplay.
Yeah.
That's been done. But this had production values like you wouldn't believe. You know, there was. Well, let's start with who they had in it. They had Ian Dury.
Hello. Deus Ex Machina.
For those who didn't know, singer. With the Blockheads, and he had a very distinct voice as well. I'm guessing all these people had quite distinct voices, and that's why they were picked.
He was a bit of a Cockney wind-up merchant, weren't he, Ian Dury?
Oh, he's brilliant. The Blockheads were an excellent band.
Yeah, very, very good.
He's not about anymore, unfortunately. But one of the other people they had was a former Doctor Who, John Pertwee.
Deus Ex Machina. Hello.
Also known as Wurzel Gummidge. For those of you in the UK. Again, distinctive voice, and he narrated quite a lot of that. And, of course, you had Frankie Howard.
Hello, hello, what have we here? A defect, I'll be bound.
A very sort of distinct voice again. And to get them free, and they're quite big names at the time, you know, you have to say, to drag them into a Spectrum game, and obviously, I don't know what fee they were paid, but, I mean, has quite a big budget for this. The presentation of the box art was brilliant. It was like sort of that Metropolis sort of face, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That really, really sort of striking box art. And the instructions opened up into like a big poster with, again, the box art on it. And it was basically a game about the seven ages of man, loosely based on a sort of an embryo. And you have to play a game to sort of get yourself to the next stage where you're a child, and then to the next stage where you're a man, or, you know. Until you basically go out throughout your whole life. So it probably wasn't, you know, an addictive or fascinating game to play in that sense, but as a piece of art and as an achievement, and just for the production values.
It was. I mean, I'd agree with you. Again, this is not on my list, but I can completely understand the reasons it's on yours, because it was very, very innovative for its time. And the fact they managed to, Mel Croucher managed to get so many big names.
Well, he's, you know, he's done a remake of this as well, and he's got Christopher Lee doing the voice, which again sort of fits perfectly, really.
Well, that's it, yeah, yeah.
USXMachina2.com if anyone's interested in that. Unfortunately, though, this didn't really sell. It was quite expensive for a Spectrum game.
It was, yeah, yeah.
And only sold in mail order from Automata itself, but you can actually buy this in the shops for one reason or another. And it just flopped, really. Got quite a cult status now, and quite expensive if you want to get it on eBay. For a Spectrum game, again, you're looking at £10-15, maybe 20. And I've seen a pre-release go for over £100. I don't know if you remember that, seeing that, sorry.
No, I don't think I ever have, actually. Funny you should say that, though. I have been looking into Deus Ex Machina. I've seen a couple of... There are a few copies floating around for the MSX, which I wasn't aware of.
Oh, all right.
And that can be picked up quite cheap. So I think I might be firing up my Toshiba at some point in the
week. Yeah, because you managed to score one of them off of VB, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
MSX. Funny enough, I've just sold one, because I've got two of them. Well, I've only got one of them now. I just sold one to the guy who's making the Bedrooms to Billions film.
Oh.
He said that Mel Croucher hasn't actually got a copy of it himself, and he's going to present it to him. So I don't know if that copy I sold him is going to go off to Mel Croucher himself. It'd be nice to think it would.
It would be, yeah, yeah.
That's Deus Ex Machina, and that's why it goes in my top 10, just because it's something that needs to be experienced. And certainly, it's such a mysterious and fascinating game in that sense, you know.
Yeah.
It's just got to go in there somewhere, and it did. So there you go, it's at number 6.
My aim is high and noble. I'm singing as I'm swimming. I giggle and I wriggle and make a new beginning. I believe we have an appointment with destiny. A short life, but a happy one.
Simon, your number 5 is...
My number 5 is, this is probably going to be another predictable one, but it's Trash Man by New Generation Software. Very, very good game. Very playable. Beautiful looking as well. The streets actually look... I mean, you actually get... at the time, certainly, you've got the feeling that, you were really there.
Lovely
little touches.
I remember every now and again my mum would come home with a... because she worked in Smith's at the time. She'd come home with a Spectrum game for us. If I'd done well at school or done something well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember one day she came home with Cookie, you know, by Altmark, and that was a good choice. And then one day she came home with this and go this way. I don't know what it was. I don't know how my mum managed to pick out these really top games. Maybe it was someone at work saying this is a really good one or something like that, you know. But yeah, I always remember Trash Man, because I had nothing about it before. The cover's uninspiring. It's just a picture of a dustbin. And you load it up, and it's brilliant. You know, the graphics are excellent, and the gameplay's great. You've got a sense of humour.
Yeah.
I know exactly why you've picked it. What else do you remember about Trash Man?
Well, apart from the fact that it was quite difficult, I never made it past the first two or three streets. After a while, it just really got insanely hard. And this is my memory of it. Maybe I was just rubbish at games at the time. But there was the nice little touches, like you could go into the houses and they'd give you bonus points and come out with these silly little comments and...
Yeah. It'd be like a joke or something, wouldn't it?
And
it'd be like going and come out and then it'd give you the punchline of the joke. Also, I remember if you walked on the grass, then a dog start chasing you and stuff.
Actually, I'm not sure about that.
Because, hang on, perhaps we should explain what the game's about. You're a dustbin man. And you've got to pick up the trash in a street.
That's basically it. You've got
road and things.
You've got speeding cars that obviously have no regard for safety at all. Yep. There's no pedestrian crossings either.
Because I do remember if you walked on the grass, your bonus points went down because they'd come out and have a go at you.
Yeah.
And I swear there was a dog in it. And if it bit you, you had to limp around and you walked a bit slower.
I honestly can't remember that. You're more than likely right.
I'll have to check it out, but yeah.
It's, Yeah, I think I'm going to have a look into it.
And
yes.
I also remember there was a pub, you know, in one of the streets, and you could go in there, you could come out drunk, and you was like all stammering around and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nice little touches and all that. And it was, like, they didn't have to put them in, you know, it was still been a good game.
But they did sequel as well, didn't they? They did Travels with Trash Man.
Yeah, that was a bit sort of... It was just like different locations throughout the world and you had to go and pick up... I remember there was one in a bull ring in Spain.
That was it, yeah, that's the one that I was thinking of, funnily enough. But
roses or something.
It was just lacking a little bit.
Yeah, I mean...
It didn't feel as special, did it, as the original?
Well, it was original. That's the key word there. It was original. Yeah. There's nothing like it before or since, to be honest, really. I think there was a remake made at some point. I think I saw it in Retro Gamer. About a remake. I'll have to Google that. But yeah, Trash Man, very worthy. I agree with you on that one. It's in my top 10. But not there. But my number 5 is actually Daily Thompson, which we talked about earlier.
Right.
I did rate that. Obviously a bit better than you did.
Well, another reason for it, I mean, well, you may well disagree with here, but there are a couple of reasons why it didn't quite rate, in my mind, it didn't get a little bit higher.
Sure.
The 1500 metres, the very last event.
Yeah, but...
was an absolute nightmare. Every other event's a joy to play through, and then you get to the 1500 metres to sort of wrap up the game, and you spend what seems like several ice ages just constantly tapping
and
buttons.
It would knacker your keyboard, games like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they all had 1500 metres in, didn't they? Activision, Decathlon had it in as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know who thought that was a good idea. It's an endurance test. Yeah, maybe, but...
In more ways than one.
Yeah. So yeah, Daily Thompson goes in at number 5 for me. What did you have for number 4, Si?
Number 4... I've got what I'm probably thinking is quite an obscure title. It's The Oracle's Cave by Doric Computer Services.
It's not obscure. I had it, and it was brilliant. And I don't know how I've missed it and didn't put it in my top 10. You've just reminded me of it now.
Well, I thought it was stunning. I mean, again, it's one of these, it's like Ghostbusters. It's such a good game that obviously they had to forego doing anything spectacular with the graphics. But it's written in BASIC, which is probably part of the reason.
So what was the actual object of the game, for those who haven't played it?
Well, the object of the game, I mean, you started off and you're given 4 different quests to choose from. So you can fight a mummy, a centaur, a fiery dragon, or a black knight. And basically, it's make your way through the caves, kill the boss, collect as much treasure as you can. It's a very light RPG. But the trouble is, there weren't that many RPGs around for the Spectrum. I mean, ever, to be honest. That was... really was the Commodore's forte back then, was with a lot of the SSI games, the Gold Box AD&D titles. I don't know if you probably do remember them.
Yeah, I know. You're quite obsessed with them, aren't you? You know,
I'm a big fan of them, but this is one of very few good RPGs for the Spectrum.
Well, I remember the first time I loaded it up. I think I bought it at a market, me and my mate, and we got back to my place and we put it on expecting it to be an adventure. And once we started to see it animated and stuff, because it does animate slightly, doesn't it? The boat walks.
It does, yeah, yeah.
That sort of, I wasn't expecting that, and I was hooked then. And some of the monsters are quite interesting as well, you know, where they just sort of appear.
I mean, they're not brilliantly drawn, the monsters, but there appears to be a fair few of them. So there's quite a lot of variation in it. The game actually is, obviously when you load up the game, you've got to wait a few minutes because it randomly sets up the dungeons as well, the caves.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you something I've just thought of. There was a similar game, an RPG, sort of on the same thing. It was a game called Dragon's Bone by Quicksilver, and that was similar. But that's another...
This
it might
is
have
one
been 1993 or something. Can't remember.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I've heard of the title. It's one that I've had at varying points, but I never got around to playing it.
Dragon's Bay. So, stick it on your emulator when you get a chance. It's like Oracle's Cave, but sort of more of a 3D environment. You know, great game, and I still like it now. I do own it still. In fact, I own all of these still. Oracle's Cave. Good shout there. For my number 4, I picked Trash Man, which we've already talked about. No need to go over it again, but top game.
Well, it's a superb game.
Hello, Mr. Sid here. If you're after some retro gaming goodness, then you have come to the right place. From the Speccy to the Sega Master System, Capcom to Codemasters, and Space Invaders to Space Harrier, it's all covered in the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
Well, Glenn, did you have a nice Christmas?
Oh, quiet. We just stayed in, didn't we? What about you, Alan?
Oh, very pleasant, very pleasant. Except on Boxing Day, when I chopped a man's head off and stuck it on a spike.
Really, Alan?
Yes, I was playing Mortal Kombat on my nephew's video game. But seriously.
Number three, what did you get?
Right, for number three, I picked Turn Our Nog by Gargoyle. If you look at the instruction book for this, it states that this is a computer movie. A lot of games sort of throughout this title.
Yeah, a bit ambitious.
Avalon was another one. The plot's quite simple. You play a character called Cookalane who's directly from the blurb, so this is I'll put down as part of my notes. The plot centres around Cookalane, who has departed the world of the living and entered the Turn Our Nog, the land of youth, and to return he must reunite the fragments of the Seal of Callum. That's the plot.
Right.
It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. There's no explanation as to why he's departed the world of the living. Presumably it's because he's died. But it's a wonderful game. At the time, it was the biggest game I'd ever seen.
It looked brilliant.
It was. The animation was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. The main animation was stunning. The puzzles were very obscure, though. I mean, it was a very, very tricky game to solve.
Well, I think I loaded it up once. I had a copy of it, and I remember being impressed with the animation and things, and probably because I didn't have the instruction manual.
I mean, this is one of the things as well, yeah. I mean, it's a long game, and you do... Patience was something you'd need to get your way around it. They did actually provide a map with the game. The trouble is, the map, yeah, it only actually displayed areas of the game world. It didn't display the paths. So you could see where everything was, but you couldn't see how to get there. And because some of these doorways that were scattered around in the world would lead you to completely random locations. There were doors you could go through and end up in one area, and then you walk through it again and you'd end up in a completely different area to the one that you'd left.
Yeah.
Very, very bizarre.
That's why I played it for about 5 minutes and stopped. Maybe I got confused or something.
I'd have to say that one of the things that actually helped me get through it, there is a map in Crash by somebody called Michel Welsh. I remember it clearly. There was a map of Turn Our Nog, and it was absolutely fantastic. It was basically all the items. It wasn't a solution. It didn't tell you what you had to do or anything like that, but it just mapped everything out clearly, told you what was where, and it still took me hours and hours to finish it, but...
Oh, so you actually finished it?
I did actually finish it. It's one of the few games on the Spectrum that I managed to get round to completing.
Blimey. So if anyone needs any hints and tips and stuff, they've got to come to you then.
No. Oh, I haven't got that sort of time anymore, I'm afraid, Darren.
That's fair enough. Okay, for my number three, I had Pyjama Armor, and I picked this. I remember playing Automania, which was the prequel to Pyjama Armor, which is when the sort of Spectrum public, buying public, were introduced to Wally, who went on to do Everyone's a Wally and Herbert's Dummy Run. That was in that chain of games as well. Pyjama Armor was an arcade adventure, sort of like Dizzy, if you like, where you had to walk around solving puzzles as you went and pick up objects that you could interact with other objects, etc., etc. And the idea of the game was Wally was asleep and you were dreaming, and you had to go around and try and get the alarm clock to work by getting some batteries and putting the batteries in and winding it and etc. and etc. And you had to walk around the house. This was the first game me and my mate ever completed, and I think that's why it stuck out for me. It was brilliantly animated. Graphics were really, really good at the time.
I remember this. It was a very, very nice looking game, yeah.
Yeah, and we were so chuffed when we completed it. We phoned up Microgen, who made the game,
And the bloke on the other end of the phone said, well done, we're bringing out a game soon called Everyone's a Wallet. And we thought, wow, exclusive, you know, news there. Wait till the next day at school and go around telling everyone. And I thought he was going to say, yeah, and you've won a prize, of, you know, and all that. And he never did. He said, well, thanks very much, and buggered off. So, but it was nice to speak to someone from Microgen. I had no idea who it was. But, yeah, and they just really stuck out for me. And I've looked at it since, and still a really good game. Whether I've had the, ever have the time to go through it all again is another thing.
The whole Wally series, to be honest with you, they were all excellent games, but they were big. So
yeah, you had to put some time into it.
But
really, really good. And one of the rooms was, you'd walk into one of the rooms and it was a game of Asteroids that you could play. Space Invaders.
That's it. Yeah,
you had to fire bits of stuff from your broom cupboard up at the Space Invaders. Which, bearing in mind, at this sort of time, you'd pay £5 for a Space Invaders game, wouldn't you? The Spectrum. And this was within the game, so it's sort of two for the price of one, almost, you know.
It was a nice little touch. I think they did similar things in Herbert's Dummy Run.
Yeah, well, that's why I thought of Asteroids, because everyone's a Wally had Asteroids.
Yeah.
In it. And Herbert's Dummy Run, what did that have in it? I never played Herbert's Dummy Run, sorry.
Was probably the one that I played more than any of them, to be honest. But they were all good. They were all excellent.
Yeah, so that goes in at number three for me. So now we're getting down to Nitty Gritty City.
Number two, Sableworth by Ultimate.
Right, so you had to get your Ultimate game in there.
I had to get one. It wasn't going to be Nightlaw by any stretch of the imagination.
There was Underworld as well.
There was Underworld. It wasn't going to be that either. Underworld was one of those. It was an excellent game, but it was so hard. It was impossibly hard.
Sableworth, then, why does that go in at number two for you?
Well, they took the formula that they had in Attic Attack in 1980. I think it was late 1983 that came out.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to describe. I think they simplified it with Sableworth. There wasn't quite so much to do. But everything about the game absolutely works.
So what was the actual objects of the game? Well, it was set in the jungle, wasn't it?
It was set in the jungle, yeah. Not a lot of variation, to be honest, in the map. Apart from you had the mountain areas, and towards the centre you had the caves that you could wander around. But you had to collect the four pieces of the amulet, basically.
Right.
So that you could exit at the centre of the map. That was it.
Did you ever achieve this feat?
Yes.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So another game. You must have been pretty good at games then.
No, I was terrible at games. But
you completed two games on your top ten. I think I did one game out of the whole lot, and that was because my mate helped me.
They released thousands of games for the Spectrum, though.
Well, yeah.
to complete two out of, what was it, about 12,000-13,000, something like that?
I did complete Ant Attack. That was the only other one, I think. It was the first ever game I completed.
Wow. I don't think I ever finished that. That was another great game.
Yeah, yeah, but
but anyway, we're digressing a bit.
So I would have picked Underworld as my ultimate game. I haven't picked an ultimate game on purpose, because like everyone does, but Underworld would have been more of the one that I would have picked, because I found that much more playable, where you could sort of float on the bubbles and you get the rope and you can go down, and the way you could sort of ping your guy all over the place and
Great touches. I can't deny that. It did have some great touches. But it was, for me, it was just one of these games that was insanely hard. And also, not to give too much away about my number one choice, but there's probably far too many platformy games on this list anyway.
Right. So you have got a platform game, or you haven't? Don't tell me.
Well, Jet Set Willy was in there.
So Sableworth, yeah, I can't argue with it being at number two, because, like I say, these top tens are your own personal one, aren't they? But I think it's worthy of anyone's top ten Spectrum games from 1984, because it is a good game, but I just made a point of not picking them, because just to be different, I suppose, because everyone picks it.
Well, I mean, this is what I said. I tried to sort of avoid... You do. You try and avoid cliches. And,
yeah.
But again, it's one of them that...
A little bit, you know.
Well, that's it. But ultimately, no pun intended, you've got to go back to games that you remember.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point. And for my number two, I picked Chucky Egg by ANF. More fun than Manic Miner. Technically, maybe not as pretty, but definitely more fun. The speed of the guy as he's running around. And I remember you could sort of jump and grab onto a ladder as you're in midair. I used to like, you know, the speed. You can really zip around the screen. And you basically, it's a platform game where you've got to collect eggs. You're a farmer.
I think it was Hen House Harry.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure with
sense.
That.
He was in a hen house. I thought he was a farmer, but I suppose it's the same thing, really. He had a big hat on, anyway.
We'll have to Google it.
Yeah.
Just double check.
Hen House Harry, then. I'll accept that. you have to collect eggs. I think there was... How many screens were there? 10 screens or something, and then it reverts back to screen one, but the big sort of bird in the cage in the corner starts chasing after you, and there's no other birds on the screen. Was that right? I should have played this again before I started.
You should have played it again. To be honest, I've not played it in years and years and years. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it when I first played it, but
I'm gonna it's play one it of those after this. Because I owe it to myself, and I should have really done it before. But I'm not changing my mind. Chucky Egg was... I always preferred it to Manic Miner. It was faster, more playable, and just an all-round better at gaming experience. You know, Manic Miner, once you've got over the well moment, because Manic Miner was really the first decent platformer on the Spectrum.
Absolutely,
there's no doubt about that, and still is. You know, it's regarded as probably, I would say by many, as the best platform game on the Spectrum. You know, I don't think there'd be many people that would disagree. It'd certainly be up there. But I always preferred Chucky Egg. I thought it was much more playable.
I'd have to agree with you, to be honest with you. Yeah, there was a lot more controlling the guy.
Yeah.
There seemed to be a lot more satisfaction. I mean, there wasn't a great deal. Manic Miner, I mean, it was just left, right and jump.
Yeah.
But obviously, you've mentioned earlier things about being able to grab all the ladders and things like that in midair. It's little touches, the little extra bits of control that you can get out of him.
And it had a sort of Donkey Kong level, didn't it, with platforms going up and...
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was very, very sort of. It was more arcadey than a lot of the other platform games. So
you'd agree, Chucky Egg deserves to be up there.
Yeah, certainly.
Next time. Okay, what did you have for your big one? What is number one for you?
Number one. Well, I mean, you've talked about Manic Miner and the fact that most people will probably regard it as the best platform game on the Spectrum.
Right.
I don't.
I said some people, not everyone.
Some people. Well, this is what I'm coming to. My choice for number one is Technician Ted by Hewson.
Right, and I remember you going on about that. I didn't think you liked it that much, though. So
it's,
what's special about that, then?
Where to start? It's one of the most complete platform games on an 8-bit system, in my mind. When you start off, the loading screen. Have you ever loaded up a copy of this?
Not without it being emulated, no. I might have done years and years ago, but not recently.
The first time I ever played it, obviously you put the tape in and you start loading it up, and all you expect is, you know, 3-4 minutes, some dodgy backdrop, and, you know, rush off, make yourself a cup of coffee or orange squash or whatever. But this was animated. I mean, Commodore, my best friend at the time, he was a Commodore owner, and we were very used to going up to his house, and he'd be loading up things like Daily Thompson's Decathlon, and you'd get the picture had slowly come up as they had that absolutely brilliant music playing in the background. But you never had anything like that for the Spectrum. But this one was a little bit different. You had little Technician Teds running backwards and forwards across the screen while the timer ran down in the bottom corner, which I thought was fantastic. I actually sat there. This is probably going to seem quite sad, but my family actually sat there, and the very first time we played it, we started having bets as to which one would win. As if it was some sort of really, really strange loading screen race.
Well, people forget these little subtle things that seem like subtle little things now. They were quite a big deal at the time. You know, you have to put yourself in 1984 mode to appreciate these sort of things, don't you? Because now it's easy. You've got, I don't know, Call of Duty and Uncharted and your PlayStations and your Xboxes and whatnot.
Yeah.
But back then, it's just these little bits and pieces were really, like, impressive, weren't they? I remember...
Well, I think that's been part and parcel of the list so far, to be honest with you, that it's... The games in themselves are probably not anything, by any stretch, absolutely amazing, stunning, brilliant games, but there's so many touches and nice little flourishes and special things about them that it feels criminal not to have them on the list.
Well, it's a personal top 10, and I think that's the main difference. I mean, you know, it's easy to say, oh, the Spectrum top 10 from 1984. It's Night Law, it's Jet Set Willy, it's this, get out and the other, and it's, you know, you can go through all the usual sort of suspects. But so what I like about this is that, you know, these obscure little games that we didn't actually, a lot of people wouldn't have chosen, you know. And it's going to give me a little bit of motivation to get up and fire up my emulator and have a look at these again for the second time in years, you know. Okay, Technician Ted was your number one. My number one, pretty predictably, I'm sure a lot of people, would be School Days. The concept of the game is to, you're a schoolboy, Eric, and you've got to go around and collect shields from the school that are dotted all around the school. You can see the whole school laid out in front of you. And of course, teachers are trying to stop you, and the school bully's trying to stop you. And there's a guy who's one of the other kids who tries to grass you up every 2 minutes, saying you have to be at lessons at certain times. There's little touches, like you can write your name on the blackboard and write swear words on the blackboard, which everyone did. And it's just an all-round great game. It's remade in 99. I think there was a game called Class of 99, wasn't there?
That was right, yeah.
Remake.
Yeah, they did remake it. It was excellent, yeah.
And I suppose the modern-day equivalent of it would be the game Bully on the PlayStation 2. Sort of the same game, but really, really updated. And the first time I saw it was brilliant. I look at it now and it's brilliant, and it's a cult classic, really, with Spectrum users. I think it was released on the Commodore 64 as well, and it did have a sequel as well, Back to School, which was...
They added the girl school to that, didn't they?
That was right,
Bicycle,
yeah.
And yeah, it was more of the same, but bigger, really.
Yeah, and it was just fun going around firing your catapult. You had a catapult in it, and you could ping it off teachers' heads. And I just really sort of fell in love with the game, and I really would say it's one of my if you're going to talk about an all-time top 10 Spectrum games, that would be in there. I'm not sure where, but it would be in there for sure.
No, I can't disagree with your choice again. No, it's an excellent, excellent game.
And I am surprised it wasn't in your top 10 as well, mate.
Well, it was one of those that sat on the fringes.
Well, let's talk about that. Did you have any ones that almost made the cut?
Well, School Days, obviously, you've just mentioned.
Yeah.
There were a few others. Tornado Low Level, TLL.
Yes.
By Vortex was another game that sort of quite make it.
Really difficult, though, I remember.
Oh, very, very hard game. But absolutely brilliant. Graphically, it was just... It's one of those that was quite ahead of its time, actually. The use of colour, the scrolling, lovely. Costa Panayi, I believe it was, who wrote that.
Oh,
absolutely
right.
Brilliant. So, and of course, there's another one. This is one that you've probably thought about as well, and Lords of Midnight.
Well, no, I never ever really got into that. I remember seeing it once or twice and wasn't impressed, but that's blasphemy for some people. I know this. Some people loved it. Obviously, you did as well.
It was an excellent game.
I know it was massive, and that was quite an achievement.
It was. I mean, it was basically, it was as close as you could get to Tolkien on a Spectrum,
yeah.
And it was that way to be honest with you, to the end of the Spectrum shelf life, really. There was never anything like it. I know the late, great Mike Singleton released Doom Duck's Revenge, but somehow it felt like it was a bit, I think it was a step backwards, really. But, I mean, it didn't make the list, unfortunately.
There was Boulder Dash, but I would consider that to be a Commodore 64 game, again.
It's one of those that's remembered more for being on the 64 than the Spectrum. There's a lot of games like that, unfortunately.
Also, there was Fantastic Voyage by Quicksilver.
I remember that. Wasn't that actually released originally as Blood and Guts?
Yes.
Before they changed the name.
Yeah, that was the game where basically you've got to go inside someone's body it's based on that film,
Fantastic Voyage. Yeah, no Raquel Welsh in the Quicksilver version though.
No,
shame.
You can't have everything. It was a Spectrum. There was Fred as well, a game called Fred, brilliant platformer.
I remember that, yeah
that almost made it. Hero, again, more of a Commodore 64 game for me. Cockatoni Wilf.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad title, actually.
Yeah, I remember that being pretty good. Lode Runner, again,
one of my favourite ever games, but more of a Commodore 64 game, Match Day. You missed.
Match Day. You see, I love football games on the Spectrum. I think we spoke earlier about the management games, and I enjoyed them sort of later on, sort of towards the back end of the 80s.
Yeah.
But the actual arcade games, Match Day 2, I played to death. Yeah. But my favourite ever 8-bit football game will always be Emlyn Hughes on the, funnily enough, on the Commodore.
Yeah. Which I thought was Ted Traitor there. He's a Spectrum man. There you go. The other thing we had was Match Point, the tennis game. That was 1984.
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah.
Brilliant game. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant tennis simulation. Muggsy, One Melbourne House. That was a gangster sort of.
It was, yeah. It was very, very simple, if I remember, though. It was basically just.
But the graphics.
Choosing numbers. But
if you wanted to say brilliant graphics for that time, look at Muggsy. Yeah. YouTube it or something. Psytron by Beyond Software. I remember the graphics of that were pretty good as well. Never, couldn't get into the game though.
No, well, I found it really hard to play, to be honest with you.
And you had your Adventures, Level 9 Adventures, Return to Eden, Sherlock by Melbourne House, another adventure, Sir Lancelot by Melbourne House.
I remember that. Yeah, that wasn't too bad. That was quite a good little platformer, if I remember.
What else? Tin and Old Trash Man, Turmoil by Bug by Valkyrie 7 by the Ram Jam Corporation. Don't remember that. Remember the box?
Yeah, I'm exactly the same there. I remember the box for it, but I've never played it.
A platformer we both missed, Monty Mole, which was brilliant, but I found really difficult.
It was very, very, very tricky. This is probably going to be deemed blasphemy, but I was never that enamoured with the Monty Mole series. I thought Alf Wiedersehen Monty was excellent.
Right.
The peak of the series, but I wasn't a huge fan for some reason.
It was, you know, quite a big hit back at the time, I remember.
It was, yeah, yeah.
A game by Silversoft called Worst Things Happen at Sea, which I know you know of.
Yeah.
That's an excellent game, and should maybe, in hindsight, have gone in there somewhere, but it didn't. You're a robot, and you've got to patch up a boat that's making its way across the Atlantic.
Excellent game, yeah.
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 And Zombie, which was the sort of sequel, if you like, to Ant Attack. It was Ant Attack with Zombies.
Well, this is another one that I actually considered, but no, I mean, I thought it was just, it's one of these, a bit like things like Alien 8 and Nightshade and things like that. They're basically Nightlore with knobs on, really, aren't they?
Yeah, just, yeah.
And Zombie, I felt, was exactly the same. It was just a polished version of Ant Attack. Fantastic game, but it's Ant Attack, just buffed up and polished a bit.
Right, so just quickly for the record, do you want to quickly go through your top 10?
Right, yep, okay. Right, at number 10, I've got Jet Set Willy. Number 9 is Bruce Lee. Number 8 is Daley Thompson's Decathlon. Number 7 is Booty. Number 6, Ghostbusters. Number 5 is Trashman. Number 4, The Oracle's Cave. Number 3, Turn-Arnog. Number 2, Saberwolf. And number 1, Technician Ted.
Excellent. So I'm sure there's some games there that are new to some people, especially if you wasn't around in 1984, which some of the listeners probably weren't. For me, it's going to make me go back, and I'm certainly going to look at Booty again, because I haven't played that game for years.
Well, on a personal note, I'm going to go and have a go on Moon Alert.
Oh, yeah.
This one of those that you picked out, and I'm quite shocked that I missed it. Very, very good game.
Just quickly, I'll go through my top 10. At number 10 was The Biz. 9 was Jet Set Willy. 8 was Moon Alert. 7 was 3D Star Strike. 6 was Deus Ex Machina. 5 was Daley Thompson's Decathlon. 4 was Trash Man. 3 was Pajama Armor. 2 was Chucky Egg. And 1 was School Days. So, again, hopefully that's made a few people sit up and think, I'll have a look at that game again. If there was any we missed out, though, that you think we've missed out, definitely get in touch on the forums at www.retroasylum.com. Also,
my name on Retro Asylum is Simon LCFC.
Okay, and I'm Foggy, Foggy. Have you got a Twitter account or anything, Si?
I haven't, I'm afraid. No.
Okay, maybe you should get one. If you want to contact me on Twitter, it's Retro Darren. If you want to leave an iTunes review, please do.
We love having an iTunes review, and we read them out as well. So if you want your name read out on the air, so to speak, then leave an iTunes review, preferably a good one. Big thanks to Simon. I've been Foggy, F-O-G-G-Y, in the forums, or on Twitter, it's Retro Darren. Thank you for listening, and we're going to play you out with a song from the aforementioned Deus Ex Machina on the Spectrum. This song features Mel Croucher and Frankie Howard.
Look at the score clock down in the corner. No mouse to run up it. The mouse is extinct, but the rat is surviving. The digits are counting. Emission control. Counting my blessing. Look at the score clock down in the corner. No mouse to run up it. I said the mouse is extinct, but the rat is surviving, and the digits are counting. Emission control, counting my blessing. I will be born sooner than later. 9 months compression into one program. The wonders of science. Suspend your belief, and I'll tell you a secret.
Alpha to Omega. Defect police report. Unauthorized activity in telepathic frequencies of the machine. Isolate unprogrammed data immediately and erase the extreme prejudice. Yes. Follow the sequence.
Right, guys, so hopefully you enjoyed that episode. I mean, how can you have not enjoyed that episode? It's fantastic. It's about the ZX Spectrum. Now, first things first then. Next competition to win a set of tickets for the 18th of May for Revival. Now, this time you don't have to try and do a time score on a game or try and get the highest score. It's nice and simple. You can do this via the forum. You can do this via Facebook. You can do this via Twitter. I'm going to basically upload an image. It's a caption contest. And what you have to do is give us the best caption. The winner will win a set of tickets for the 18th of May for Revival. So again, yeah, big special thanks to Chris Wilkins for actually providing us those tickets. Now, the next competition is to win some codes for the C64 Elite Collection. And that was kindly donated to us by Steve Wilcox. Now, this is going to be slightly different. Throughout today, which is Friday, I'm going to be putting up little codes here and there. And yeah, you'll figure out how to win as the day goes on. So stay tuned on the forum, Facebook, and on Twitter, and you could win yourself some codes for the C64 Elite Collection. All right, guys, that's my announcement. Hopefully, I'll see you next time. Goodbye.